After staring at it a few seconds, he said, "Yes, that's very handsome," and turned to go. Oh, I was so sorry for him. After all the months he had been saving up, I ran after him. I caught up with him as he was crossing the drawbridge. "Let's go for a little walk," I said.
"All right, if you want to."
He said it without looking at me. We trudged down the lane. "Oh, Stephen," I cried. "It was a much bigger present from you. Simon didn't have to save or work for it." "No, that was my privilege," he said quietly. That seemed to me a most beautiful way for him to have put it. It made me sorrier for him than ever, so sorry that I found myself almost wishing I had fallen in love with him instead of with Simon. Then he added very softly, "My dear." And that second, a wild idea flashed into my mind. Oh, why did it? Was it something in his voice awoke that feeling in me? I stopped walking and stared at him. His face was golden from the sunset. He asked me if I wanted to turn back. I said, "No, let's see if there are any late bluebells in the wood." He looked at me quickly, right into the eyes at last. "Come on," I said. Neither of us spoke a word. I led the way all the time and reached the little grassy clearing in the middle of the wood before he did. There I turned and waited for him. He came closer and closer to me, then stood still, staring at me questioningly. I nodded my head, and then he took me in his arms and kissed me, very gently. It didn't mean a thing to me. I know I didn't kiss him in return. But suddenly he changed and kissed me more and more, not gently at all, and I changed too and wanted him to go on and on. I didn't even stop him when he pulled my dress down over my shoulder. It was he who stopped in the end. "Don't let me, don't let me," he gasped and pushed me away so violently that I nearly fell over. As I staggered backwards, I had a wild feeling of terror, and the minute I regained my balance, I plunged blindly back through the wood. He called after me, "Mind your eyes! It's all right, I'm not coming after you!" But I went on thrusting my way through the larches, shielding my face with my arm. I ran all the way to the castle and dashed up the kitchen stairs, meaning to lock myself in my room, but I slipped when I was halfway up, banging my knee badly. Then I burst into tears and just lay there, sobbing. After a little while, I heard him at the kitchen door. "Cassandra, please stop crying," he called. He came to the foot of the stairs. I began to pull myself up by the banisters, still crying. He said, "But it's all right, really it is. There's nothing wrong in it if we love each other." I turned on him fiercely. "I don't love you. I hate you." And then I saw the look in his eyes and realized how dreadful it all was for him. Until then, I had only been thinking of my own misery. I gasped out, "No, no, I don't mean that, but oh, I'll never be able to explain." And then I dashed through to my room and locked both doors. I caught sight of Simon's present on the window seat. I went over, closed the gramophone part, and lay with my head and arms on it. And for the first time in my life, I wished I were dead. When it was quite dark, I pulled myself together enough to light a candle and begin to go wretchedly to bed. A few minutes later, there was a knock on the door to the landing, and Stephen called out, "I don't want to come in, but please read the note I'm pushing through to you." He had written, "Dearest Cassandra, please do not be unhappy. It will come right. It is just that you are so young. I forget that sometimes because you are so clever. If you forgive me for shocking you so, please write yes on a piece of paper and put it under my door. We won't talk about it. Anyway, not for a long time. You say when. Truly, it is all right. With love from Stephen."